Lately, I've been thinking about how most of us are trying to be healthier, but we're honestly just guessing sometimes. We're taking supplements, we're following workout trends, saving wellness tips, and hoping something sticks. But what if the thing everyone's recommending isn't actually what your specific body needs? Well, that is why I tried True Diagnostic. They test your biological age, so not just how old you are on paper, but how your body is actually aging, along with key health markers like inflammation and nutrients. And instead of overwhelming you with data, they give you a really clear 90-day plan so you know exactly what to focus on next. So I took the test myself, and it was genuinely so easy. The kit showed up at my house. It was just a quick finger prick, and then I dropped it in the prepaid envelope. Done. I'm waiting on my results now, and I'm really curious about inflammation and my nutrient levels, especially with how busy life is right now. But what I like most about True Diagnostic is that it takes the guesswork out of wellness. It helps you figure out what supplements and lifestyle changes actually matter for you specifically, and which ones might just be wasting your money. They have a few options depending on what you're looking for. There's True Age, which focuses on longevity and how fast you're aging. There's True Health, which looks at your health right now. Or you can do the combo kit, which kind of gives you the full picture. No matter which you choose, you get your top three actions to focus on for the next 90 days, which makes it feel doable. And this isn't just influencer wellness stuff. True Diagnostic uses advanced epigenetic testing and is trusted by longevity clinics and health professionals. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off at truediagnostic.com using the code MAMA, that's M-A-M-A, at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, True is spelled T-R-U, diagnostic.com, and use code MAMA for 20% off today. You can choose True Age, True Health, or the combo kit as a one-time purchase, or you can do a subscription. Now, if you're already spending time and money trying to feel better, this just helps you make sure it's actually working. So when you try it and when you fall in love with it, be sure to let me know. Before we go on, I want to take a moment to thank the sponsor of today's episode, and that is Time for Learning. Now let's talk about it. Something I know a lot of you have either thought about or you're already doing, homeschooling. And if you're in that season of life where you're craving flexibility, or maybe your child just doesn't thrive in a traditional classroom setting, I want to tell you about Time for Learning. Now, Time for Learning is an all-in-one online curriculum for pre-K through 12th grade. It covers all the core subjects plus electives, basically everything that you could expect from a traditional school, but built for home. And what I love about it is the flexibility. You can mix subjects each day, you can focus on one subject at a time, take learning on the road, or adjust your schedule around your real life, doctor's appointment, travel, just one of those days. You're not locked in to rigid school hours. They even have something called the Cinema Series for middle and high schoolers, which are story-driven, visually engaging courses that feel way more modern and immersive than what most of us grew up with. And for parents, this is huge. They provide transcript templates, grade tracking, and planning tools that align with homeschool requirements in all 50 states. So you're not just winging it and then hoping that you did it right. Because I know that a lot of people who struggle with the idea of homeschooling worry about the fact that they're not competent enough to teach their kids these like intricate lessons, but you don't have to think about all of that. They've been around for over 20 years and have served more than a million students. So this is not just some fly-by-night program. Families actually trust it. If you're curious if Time for Learning is right for your family, visit time4learning.com. That, again, is time4learning.com to explore their curriculum and find the perfect plan for your student. And you can get started with a monthly subscription to see just how much your kids enjoy learning on their own terms. That's timeforlearning.com. Getting dressed should not be that hard. And yet somehow, whenever I'm like trying to dress up to go on a date or do something fun with Austin, I'm usually standing in front of a full closet thinking, I have nothing to wear. And that is why I love Armoire. Armoire makes getting dressed easy with a clothing rental membership that builds a wardrobe just for you with high quality, unique brands that actually make sense for your life. You take a quick 5-minute style quiz, pick items from your personalized closet, and they show up at your door in as little as 2 days. When you're ready for something new, you just swap them out, and that's it. I've been using Armoire because my body, my lifestyle, and just my personal style have all changed, and buying new clothes every time just isn't feeling realistic. One of my favorite pieces I've rented was actually this white and blue dress that Austin and I went to a Teddy Swims concert. I wore the dress. I actually posted a video of us dancing at the concert and it went kind of viral. And I had so many people asking me where I got this dress, and I rented it from Armoire. And I'll also be honest, I've always felt guilty about how many things in my closet I've only worn once, if at all. Some things still have a tag on them, but Armoire completely changed that for me. I get to stay on trend, wear beautiful designer pieces. And then there's also like loungewear that I love too. I had this really beautiful floral Kate Spade wind jacket, like wind blazer. It was so cute. I wore it on vacation, got lots of compliments. And then when I didn't feel like wearing it anymore, you just send it back. It's so easy. Another huge bonus, Armoire is women founded and women led. They even spotlight women owned designers, which makes me feel good about where my money is going. So if you're struggling to define your style right now, or maybe your body is changing because of fitness or pregnancy or just life, Armoire is such a good solution. You can size up, size down, try new silhouettes, and swap whenever you need to. There's no commitment, no pressure, just clothes that fit you where you are. And somehow it's all designer without the designer price tag. Instead of spending hundreds on one dress that I might wear one time, I kind of get this rotating closet of high-end pieces for a fraction of the cost. Fashion math finally makes sense. It's not girl math, it's fashion math. One feature I have to mention is quarterly rentals, because Armoire is the only rental company that lets you keep favorite pieces for an entire season for just $10 a month. So if you find something you truly love, you don't have to give it back right away. And if you decide to keep it, then that fee ends up going towards the final purchase. You get to decide what stays for a month, a season, or forever. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 60% off their first month. That's up to $150 off. Just visit armoire.style/mama. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/mama, MAMA, to get up to 60% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today and thank me tomorrow. Every January, I tell myself the same thing. This is the year I'm going to feel better, more energy, clearer focus, just less dragging myself through every day. And I'll be honest, I usually start the year doing everything right, or at least I think I am. Like, I'm sleeping, I'm eating better, I'm moving my body, and somehow I still feel exhausted and foggy and irritable over things that normally should not get to me, like even just my kids being kids. Well, for a long time, I just assumed that that was stress or burnout or just life in general. And what I didn't realize is that low iron can show up really quietly. Things like persistent fatigue, brain fog, headaches that don't go fully away, brittle nails, hair breakage, stuff that's easy to brush off or normalize. These are all symptoms that I was dealing with because I was suffering from low iron. And here's the thing, iron deficiency can exist even before anemia actually develops. So you can feel off long before anything looks serious or shows up like on a blood panel. So that is why I started looking into Siderol from PharmaNutra. Siderol is a premium iron supplement powered by patented sucrosomial technology. So basically, the iron is protected so your body can absorb it more efficiently, about 3 to 4 times better than standard iron. And without the common stomach issues that people associate with iron supplements like nausea or constipation. It's made with just 2 main ingredients. There's 30 milligrams of sucrosomial iron and vitamin C, and it's a simple once-a-day capsule that you can take anytime with or without food. So what stood out to me is that it's backed by over 20 years of research and more than 150 clinical studies, and it's already trusted by over 2 million people worldwide. So if you're starting the year feeling kind of tired or foggy despite having these otherwise good habits, you're not alone, and this might be the support that your body needs. So do yourself a favor and head to pharmanutra-us.com and use the code MAMA, that's M-A-M-A, for 10% off your first order powder of Piharmutra. That's PHARMANUTRA-US.com with the promo code MAMA. Feeling off doesn't always mean something's wrong. Sometimes it just means something is missing. So check it out today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This episode is brought to you by Greenlight. Get this. Adults with financial literacy skills have 82% more wealth than those who don't. From swimming lessons to piano classes, us parents invest in so many things to enrich our kids' lives. But are we investing in their future financial success? With Greenlight, you can teach your kids financial literacy skills like earning, saving, and investing. And this investment costs less than that after-school treat. Start prioritizing their financial education and future today with a risk-free trial at greenlight.com/Spotify. Greenlight.com/Spotify.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Mama Mystery. I am
your co-host, Austin.
And I am your host, Kelly.
And we are coming to you live from our bed. Literally, we're filming a podcast in bed.
Not that you needed to know that information.
It's not pertinent, but you know what? It is interesting. And sometimes interesting information
needs
telling.
Is it interesting?
I don't know. Hank's in here, too.
Hank's in here, too.
Say hello. He sniffed the mic.
He's the best. All right, Austin. It is currently 10:30 on a Friday. This is how we are spending our Friday night. And I'm about to tell Austin a pretty crazy story that will likely give him nightmares. Are you nervous?
Yeah. All she told me was it's
scared?
About some crazy woman that is crazy. And I'm just thinking, this is what I want to go to bed to. Have nightmares.
This?
Of Kelly. Oh. Waking me up going, I told you to load the dishwasher. I told you to load the dishwasher. Holding a knife over my face.
Oh my gosh. You know, it's funny that you know nothing about this story, but you just said those things.
Oh my gosh, here we go.
And if you don't already know, if you know what that movie is from, leave it in the comments.
Yeah, if you know, leave it in the comments.
Yeah, because I want to see if anyone knows what movie that's from.
I want to see if anyone knows too.
Okay, anyway, today we are talking about Catherine Knight.
Is this airing on a Monday?
Yes.
Happy Monday, everybody.
Yes. So this is the story about Catherine Knight. Catherine Knight was born October 24th of 1955 in New South Wales, Australia. Catherine's mom, Barbara, was married to a man named Jack Ruhan, and they had four boys together, but Barbara started having an affair with one of Jack's coworkers. His name was Ken Knight, and this was a huge scandal in their small town, as both of those families were really well known. So Barbara and Ken ended up having to move to another town so they could be together. Two of her sons went to live with their dad, and then the other two went to go live with their aunt in Sydney, Australia. So none of her kids stayed with her.
This is an Australian story, right?
Yeah. So anyway, then
if you're in Australia, tag us in your story.
So then Barbara and her new husband ended up getting pregnant with twin girls, and the younger twin was Catherine. They also had an additional two children together. So 4 years later in 1959, Barbara's ex-husband Jack dies, and the two boys that were living with him were sent to live with the Knight family. So growing up, Catherine was really close with her twin and also her uncle Oscar, but not really anyone else. She later claimed that she was sexually abused as a child, which continued until she was about 11 years old. She says that she was raped by members of her family, but didn't say which members, and none of those included her father. In 1969, Catherine is about 14 years old. When her uncle, Oscar, that she was super close with, commits suicide. This was devastating to Catherine. And meanwhile, things at home were getting really out of hand. Her dad, Ken, was an alcoholic who became very violent with Catherine's mother. He was known to use violence and intimidation to rape Barbara. And sometimes he would rape her up to 10 times per day.
That pisses me off so bad to hear. I hate stories like this. Ugh.
So Catherine knew this because Barbara was super open with Catherine about her sex life and how much she hated men and how much she hated having sex with her husband. I don't know why you would say that to your daughter, but I don't know. It just goes to show you like how messed up her upbringing was. So later when Catherine would confide in her mom about sexual things that her and her partners wanted her to do, Barbara would just tell her to put up with it and stop complaining. Big yikes.
I'm just shaking my head over here.
Yeah. So in school, her classmates remember two versions of Catherine. Some remember her as a model student who was very pleasant, but some remember her as a bit of a loner who had violent outbursts. And she would often bully younger, smaller students and at one point assaulted a fellow student with a weapon. And another time, she was injured during an altercation with a teacher who claimed that she was acting in self-defense. So these are clearly two very different personalities that we're talking about here. But you're starting to see, you know, just, I don't know, kind of like a little bit of her true colors.
Right. Two completely different people.
So Catherine left school at age 15 and got a job as a cutter in a clothing factory. And then the following year, she found her, quote, dream job working at a slaughterhouse, where she was quickly promoted to a boning position and was given her own set of knives. Apparently, she was really good at this job. She enjoyed it very much. She would essentially just be cutting the meat off of bones of various animals, I guess.
Hey, you know, whatever floats people's boats, and I'm fine with people having a dream job to be a fry cook if that's what you need, because the world needs fry cooks. But nobody has a dream job of being a cutting person boner at a factory. Nobody says, I want to grow up and be a boner in a meat factory.
Maybe like a 12-year-old boy.
Nobody
does. Just trying to make jokes. No, I want to grow up to be a boner.
Yeah, but not even knowing, because nobody knows what a boner in a meat factory does. Okay, so that's bullshit. Go ahead.
All right. So anyway, she was super proud of this position and her set of knives.
Hell yeah, I'm a boner, brother.
She had her own sparkly, shiny knives that she would hang above her bed just in case she ever needed them.
Okay,
She's getting weird. We're getting weird. So at age 18, Catherine meets a coworker named David Stanford Kellett.
Come over to my house. I have knives over my bed.
You want to see my knife collection?
Oh my gosh. Kelly has this voice of, hey, Mom, check out this drug that I drew. And it's completely irrelevant to this conversation. Go ahead.
So David was known to drink quite a bit, and he was a bit of a rowdy drunk. He'd go to bars, get lit, then get into fights. Yeah, but just for a little backstory on this, David's heavy drinking can be attributed to a pretty traumatic past. His best friend was killed right in front of him during a shunting accident while they were working together on a railroad. And in 1968, he witnessed a train hit a bus, which killed 6 children. And David helped rescue some of the injured kids and then pull some of the bodies from the wreckage. So I imagine that this would mess somebody up pretty bad. He started to drink quite a bit and eventually lost his job on the railroad because he would fall asleep on the job, which caused several derailments. Gosh. Then he got the job at the slaughterhouse where he met Catherine. So David and Catherine would get into violent fights of their own, but Catherine was never one to just stand down. She fought back, and David quickly realized that Catherine could hold her own and that she was not one to be messed with. So Catherine quickly became the dominant one in this relationship, and after being together for about a year, Catherine proposed to David. It's 1974, and they're getting married. They pull up to the ceremony on a motorcycle. Just close your eyes and just picture this. Don't close your eyes if you're driving. I'm telling Austin to close his eyes.
Oh, great. Now we're in a lawsuit. David
is drunk as a skunk. So Catherine is actually driving this motorcycle. And David is sitting on the back of the motorcycle, like hanging on to her as they pull up to their freaking wedding ceremony. And as soon as they arrive, Catherine's mom, Barbara, warns David by saying, quote, "You better watch this one or she'll fucking kill you. Stir her up the wrong way or do the wrong thing and you're fucked. Don't ever think of playing up on her or she'll fucking kill you."
The mom said this?
Sorry. Yes. Catherine's mom said this to David. Now that is some marriage advice.
That's going into their wedding.
They should put that on a Hallmark card.
I disagree.
With a big old motorcycle and a bride and groom on the front of it. I mean, if you're into motorcycles, that's cool. I'm just not.
Way to go, Kelly. Way to go, Kelly. You just lost all our biker listeners, you moron.
I'm just picturing this couple with this like butch Eileen Wuornos type of bride on the front riding in with her drunk as a skunk husband hanging on to the back. And then the mom's like, dude, I don't think this is a good idea. She's probably gonna fucking kill you, bro. Like, what circus is this?
I guarantee you just lost all of our biker listeners.
Oh, darn it. Okay, so on to the wedding night. Catherine and David are done consummating the marriage when he falls asleep. And this sets Catherine
off.
Way
to go, you moron. Freaking idiot, you went to bed.
This sets Catherine off because apparently some of the friends or family at the reception were bragging that they did it like 3 or 4 times on their wedding night, and she feels a little gypped. So she starts to strangle him like while he's asleep on their wedding night. He managed to fight her off that night and they stayed together.
Hell yeah, why wouldn't you?
She's just feisty. So this is just the norm for their marriage. It was very violent and turbulent. In 1976, Catherine is pregnant with their first daughter, and she's like super pregnant, okay, about to pop, when David comes home late from a dart competition. He had reached the finals, and the competition took longer than expected. So Catherine's pissed, and she decides to burn all of his clothing and shoes before he gets home. When he got home, she hit him over the back of the head with a frying pan, which severely fractured his skull. He mustered up the strength to run next door for help and collapsed as soon as he got there. The police were called and wanted to charge Catherine, but Catherine quickly changed her tune and started sucking up to David. She starts like flattering him and pleading to him and somehow gets him to change his mind and drop the charges.
These people are both mentally ill.
So in May of 76, Catherine gives birth to their daughter, Melissa, and shortly after, David finally leaves Catherine for another woman. He moves to Queensland just to get away from Catherine, but sadly left the baby behind. The day after he leaves, Catherine is seen walking down the street with baby Melissa in a stroller, and she's just like violently whipping the stroller from side to side. Someone notices this and calls for help, and Catherine ends up getting admitted to a hospital where she's diagnosed with postnatal depression. So she spent several weeks there before she gets released, gets Melissa back, but right after she's released, she takes two-month-old Melissa to a railroad, places her on the tracks, and leaves. So thankfully, a man was out foraging near the railroad. When he heard Melissa crying, he found Melissa and rescued her just minutes before a train passed. So Catherine gets arrested that day after she's found waving an axe in town, threatening to kill multiple people. And she gets readmitted to the hospital, but somehow she was able to sign herself out the following day.
Oh my goodness.
Insanity. Just total insanity. So just a few days later, Catherine gets arrested again after she slashed the face of a woman with one of her butcher knives. She demanded that this woman take her to Queensland to find David, but the woman escaped when they stopped at it's kind of like a gas station, but there's also a mechanic area over there. So by the time police finally arrived, Catherine had already taken another hostage, a young boy who she was threatening to kill with the knife. Police then attack her with brooms, which I don't fully understand. Brooms? Like, did you not have guns or those like hard sticks or I don't know. Brooms was what was written.
This is
weird.
This is okay. I get that this is sad. Okay. But I do keep thinking of the scene in Wedding Crashers where they're out front and the old lady comes out shooting the gun and Vince Vaughn goes, "This is the real world, lady. You can't just go around shooting people." That's what I keep thinking of. Waving an axe around in town.
She's just,
what a lunatic.
She's nuts.
And earlier, all the dude wanted to do was play darts.
You're still hung up on poor David, just coming home from a fun night. He reached the finals. He was so excited.
Reached the finals playing darts. Hell yeah, brother. Probably win a jackpot, $25, head home for the night, and comes home to that, getting a fractured skull.
Yeah.
And then gets sweet-talked back into not calling the cops. This lady's a Looney Tune. Go ahead.
So she was taken into custody, and she ended up getting admitted to a different hospital. This time it was a psychiatric hospital, and while she was there, she told the nurses that she intended to kill the mechanic at the gas station because he was the one who fixed up David's car, which allowed him to leave. She told the nurses that she planned to kill David and his mom. But when David found out about this, he left his girlfriend and moved back to Aberdeen with his mom to support Catherine.
Oh my gosh. I
don't know. I don't know what to say.
Just keep going.
So on August 9th of 1976, Catherine was released and moved in with David and his mom in a new suburb of Brisbane.
So this is Dart David. Dart David's back.
Same David with the fractured skull and threats on his life. And yeah, same guy. I don't get it either. I don't get it either, guys. I don't. But I'm going to talk about this at the end. I'm going to give my final thoughts. Okay. At the end. So anyway, she moves into the suburb of Brisbane with David and his mom. She got a job at another meat processing plant. And on March 6th of 1980, David and Catherine had another daughter named Natasha Marie. 4 years later, Catherine leaves David and moved in with her parents back in Aberdeen before she found a house of her own to rent with her two daughters. At one point, she injured her back, so she was unable to continue working. She was put on a disability pension, and the government gave her a housing commission house in Aberdeen. Then in 1986, Catherine meets David Saunders. Things move pretty fast with these two, and David ends up moving in with Catherine after only dating for a few months. However, he kept his old apartment just in case, and sometimes he would go spend time there, which would piss Catherine off, because she felt like he was living this whole separate life, and she began to get really paranoid about what he was doing when he wasn't with her. So they would get into fights, and she'd throw him out, and then she'd beg for him to come back, and it was just this super irrational, messy merry-go-round.
I feel bad for the kids.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, the girls getting to see this, like...
Yeah, ultimately, they are the ones that suffer the most from all of this. So in May of 1987, during an argument, Catherine became so enraged. This part really bothers me. She became...
It has to do with animals then, I bet.
She became so enraged that she took David's two-month-old puppy.
Oh my gosh, I knew it had to do with animals because you and this is already effed up.
And actually cut the puppy's throat right in front of David as an example of what she would do to him if he ever cheated on her.
How did this rewind to when this lady was in the hospital and said, "I was going to kill that mechanic"? How does she get away with getting out of the hospital?
You know, I asked myself that multiple times while I was doing research on this. And I don't know. I don't know if she was just able to manipulate her way out by saying the things that she knew they wanted to hear. I know she was very manipulative, and to be so manipulative, you have to have some sort of level of like intelligence. Mm-hmm. So I guess she just knew what to say. But after this fight settled down, Catherine excused her actions by saying she was just cranky. So that's why she cut the dog's throat. Yeah. So the following year, in June of 1988, they have a daughter together named Sarah. David ends up finding them a house, and Catherine decorates the place to feel real homey. She left no space uncovered, and I just want you to picture this house. Throughout the house, she used things like animal skins, skulls, horns, old animal traps, leather jackets, old boots, machetes, rakes, and pitchforks.
It sounds like Since you already lost our biker listeners, it sounds like a place you'd rent going to Sturgis. Like, I'm not into bikes either, really. Like, I think bikes are cool. I would have a motorcycle, but I'm not into, like, hell yeah, brother type bikes.
I think she was just going for that farmhouse look. It's very trendy.
Yeah.
She kind of missed the mark, but she tried.
Right on.
So anyway, Catherine and David get into one argument that was finally the last straw for David. During this fight, Catherine hits David in the face with an iron and stabbed him in the stomach with a pair of scissors. So David is finally like, fuck this, I'm out, and goes back to Scone. He actually goes into hiding and refused to tell anyone where he was at so that she wouldn't be able to find him.
Don't blame him.
Yeah. But you can see that like her fights are getting more and more vicious. Like the length at which she's willing to go during these fights just keeps getting further and further.
In a way, but not really. I a little bit disagree with you there. She fractured his skull over darts in the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, and now she's stabbing him in the stomach with scissors. What's the difference?
And she's cutting puppy's throat.
Like, she's just a lunatic ever since the beginning. But I get what you're saying. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So Catherine ends up hooking up with another one of her coworkers named John Chillingworth.
Sorry, John.
They end up having a son together named Eric. And surprisingly, there's not as much drama in this relationship. That is until Catherine starts having an affair with another man named John Price. So she leaves John Chillingworth for John Price. She goes from David to David to John to John. So John Price, that's where we're at now. That's where this story is going to end. John worked in the local mines and had a couple kids of his own who really liked Catherine in the beginning. In the beginning of the relationship, things were going really well, and they would go to social events together with like minimal drama. And everyone loved John Price. He was a very well-liked guy. In 1995, Catherine moved in with John, and apart from some violent arguments, he said his life with Catherine was, quote, like a bunch of roses, end quote. That is until 1998, when they got into a huge fight because John refused to marry Catherine. So to get back at him, Catherine videotaped something that he had taken home from work. But here's the thing. What he took from work was not actually anything of real value. He took home an expired first aid kit that he took out of the trash. They were going to throw it away anyway, and he salvaged it. But Catherine sent this video to his boss, and they ended up firing him. John loved his job and had been there for 17 years. So when he found out what Catherine did, he understandably kicked her to the curb. But a few months later, John and Catherine rekindled the flame, started things back up again, but John would not allow Catherine to move back in with him. Catherine, being the control freak that she is, didn't handle this very well. She is just not the type of person who you can say no to, apparently.
Not equipped to handle life.
Yeah, exactly. She pressured him to marry her, and this led to tons of arguments because he refused to marry her. She kept pressuring him, but he kept pushing back.
If you're in a relationship and you're having to pressure someone into marrying you, why do you really want to marry them? Like, so you can say, yeah, we're married. What, are you going to feel proud of it?
Right.
And they didn't even want to marry you? It becomes just a ploy for what everybody else thinks, not for what you guys think.
Yeah, it's never going to be a real genuine
situation. And if you don't want to get married, then that's fine. Live life together.
Right.
Learn to accept
There's nothing
that.
Wrong with that either. So every time they would get into these fights, John would tell a friend or a family member so that he could, you know, have someone on his side who knew his side of the story in case she went around and tried to twist it. But it got to a point where they got so tired of hearing it that they started distancing themselves from him. And I think everyone has one of those friends who just comes to them with like the constant drama that just never changes. And they get kind of tired of it. So they're like, listen, you're kind of an asshole. Like, you want my advice and you ask for advice, but you don't take it. And you're in the same situation. And I'm freaking tired of it. I think that's what his friends and family started to feel. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew he needed to just leave her. But in February of 2000, Catherine and John got into a physical altercation, and Catherine stabbed him in the chest. So John has had enough. He kicks Catherine out of the house, And on the 29th of February, he goes to the courthouse to file a restraining order against Catherine to keep her away from him and his children. Later that day, he goes to work and he tells his coworkers that if he doesn't come to work the next day, then it's probably because Catherine did something to him. So that night, John comes home from work and finds that the kids are at a friend's house for a sleepover. He goes to bed around 11 p.m. Catherine shows up and she lets herself in. She watches TV for a little bit before she heads upstairs to take a shower. And then she wakes up John to have sex, and they end up having sex, and then John falls back asleep.
Oh no.
Once John is asleep,
that
Catherine
was her way of like closure with herself, and now she's gonna do something crazy.
So Catherine reaches over into her nightstand and pulls out a butcher knife.
I'm predicting everything in this episode.
You really did. You really nailed it. How many times do you think she stabbed him? Let's see if you can guess it.
17.
More.
71.
37 times.
What the heck?
The next morning, it's about 6 a.m., and John's neighbors are alarmed that his car is still in the driveway. When John didn't arrive for work, one of his coworkers was like, oh, shit, he just told us that if he doesn't come to work, something's probably wrong. So they go, one of the coworkers goes to his house to check on him. This coworker and one of the neighbors from next door went to the house to wake him up. They go to his bedroom window and they're knocking on the window to wake him up, but they're not getting any response. So they go around to the front door, and that's where they notice there's blood on the front door. So they call the police, and the police arrive at about 8 a.m. They break down the back door, and what they find is worse than any horror you could possibly imagine.
This is what I want to hear right before I go to bed. Let's hear it.
According to blood evidence, it was apparent that John was woken up during the stabbing and tried to fight back. There was blood on and around the light switch where he tried to turn the lights on in the middle of the night to see what the fuck was going on. A trail of blood led to the front door, and against the walls, you could see the blood was getting like closer and closer to the floor, which kind of indicated he was like losing his balance and probably started stumbling. He made it outside, where it appears he tried to escape this attack, but at some point he succumbed to his injuries and either fell back inside or was dragged back into the house. After John died, Catherine does the unfathomable. According to the police, when they entered the home, they immediately noticed that the place is just a bloodbath. There is blood all over the place. They make their way into the home, and one of the officers is going towards the kitchen, but there's like this big curtain hanging in the door frame that leads into the kitchen. So when he uses his arm to move the curtain out of the way, he notices that his arm is wet. And that's when he notices it's not actually a curtain. It's skin hanging from butcher meat hooks from the door frame. He looks down and sees a torso, but it's just a torso. No legs, no arms, or head. He gets a better look into the kitchen and notices that there are meals being prepared, like with veggies and potatoes and gravy. In fact, one of the pots on the stove was still warm, and the plates that are prepared indicate that a meal was like being served. Other officers are making their way upstairs when they hear someone snoring. Catherine was passed out on the bed sleeping. They tried to wake her up, but she wouldn't wake up. So they picked her up and carried her outside to get her out of the house.
What?
They continue searching the house and find that the pot on the stove had John's head in it. And it was cooking. And there's other meat cooking and served on the plates as well. This person was serving up this man and was planning on serving him to his children. She was cooking him along with baked potatoes, pumpkin, zucchini, cabbage, yellow squash, and gravy. Beside each plate was a note with a different child's name on it. There was also a meal that was thrown out back in the backyard, and investigators think that she threw it out after she tried to eat it herself and like couldn't stomach it. Lastly, she left a note to John accusing him of raping her daughter and his other children, but these accusations were later found to be completely baseless. Investigators later found that around midnight that night, which I assume is actually before she attacked John, she took his bank card and withdrew $1,000 from his account from an ATM. But this cash was never found, so police assume that she buried it or hid it somewhere, and it still hasn't been found. So Catherine was in a coma for a few days because she was passed out because she tried to overdose on pills, and that's why they found her snoring on the bed. When she finally came to, she claimed that she had absolutely no memory of what happened, of course. She refused to give any answers as to what happened, but later came to accept the fact that she must have killed him and claims that she probably did it because he was so abusive for their entire relationship. Catherine's brother came forward and told investigators that she told him she was going to kill John and that she would end up getting away with it by just acting crazy. Initially in court, she pleaded not guilty, but then she randomly changed her plea to guilty during the trial. The judge thinks that she did this so that after the trial was over, she could appeal it by claiming that she was just insane and not in the appropriate mental state to plead anything. During the trial, she tried all sorts of hysterics. She would scream in these random outbursts. She would rock back and forth and just put on this total show. But the judge was not buying it, and he sentenced her to life in prison without the chance of parole. She was actually the first woman in Australia to receive this sentence, which in Australia is the harshest sentence. To this day, Catherine has not talked about what happened that night. In 2006, she tried to appeal her sentence by saying that her life sentence was too severe for the crime that she committed. But the judge was like, girl, you are staying put.
That was the absolute craziest ending to a domestic abuse relationship I've ever heard.
So it is absolutely absurd and extremely gory. I think, though, my final thoughts here are just that relationships like this do exist. They don't always end this way, but there are a lot of relationships where women are the manipulative, cunning abusers in a relationship, and that doesn't get talked about as much as guys being the abusive ones. And I'm sure that it's probably more common for the male to be the aggressor, but I know of relationships where women were essentially psychopaths and treated men like shit. And so I feel like this just goes to show, like, how, you know, she was able to get away with this for so long. And I assume it's probably because she proclaimed that she was acting in self-defense, or that, you know, so-and-so was actually abusing her. And so, I don't know, I feel like there's this double standard when it comes to relationships, especially domestic abuse relationships, because, you know, people don't always assume that the woman has anything to do with it, but sometimes they do.
Yeah, I think it's similar to, like, the double standard is similar to the teachers banging students thing.
Yeah.
You know, guy bangs student or girl bangs student. And it's like one way is more, in a way, socially acceptable, which I know sounds really wrong, but you get the point.
Yeah.
They're both horrible. This is, domestic abuse is just like wild, and it's really sad how people continue to go back to these relationships and seek some sort of like, I don't know, validation, and or just they're that
brainwashed
and in love or whatever, and a lot of people want, like, they subconsciously seek to fix people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just super strange, but that's,
or they're so easily manipulated into thinking someone can change because they can say all the right things.
Yeah.
And ultimately what it comes down to is that you never really know what a person is thinking when they're being abused until you're in those type of shoes. And I'm lucky enough to have never been in an abusive relationship, so I can't speak on what that person is going through. I can express my confusion when I'm reading about these men who are going back to her time and time again after going through these violent attacks. And then they go back, and it's like, what the hell?
Yeah, but men or women, but it just, like, grasps at hope. I mean, it's, I don't know, it's freaking weird.
Yeah.
It's sad. It happens every minute of every day somewhere. This chick was just absolutely a nutcase and was going to eat him with mashed potatoes and gravy.
Yikes. Big yikes.
Freaking weird.
Apparently, she is, you know, in prison, she's like a churchgoer. She goes every Sunday and she's known to be like a bad bitch amongst her other inmates. I'm sure she probably is because they're probably fearing for their lives.
Sheesh.
They probably don't want to cross her, and I wouldn't either. So
have a great week, everybody. Mama, mystery out.
Bye.
Hey, y'all crazy bitch, but you fuck so good, I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm doing you all night. Stretch yourself down my back to keep me right on. Hey, y'all crazy bitch, but you fuck so good, I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm doing you all night. Stretch yourself down my back to keep me right on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.